Radio Drome. Well, we're past our 100th episode of Radio Drome, so it's all down here.
So it's all downhill.
I can't even talk off the top of the damn show. It's all downhill from here, Brad and Alex, huh?
So what's the point in even doing it anymore?
I know. I mean, should we even do the Adam and Eve promo? I mean, God.
Well, hey, if you like going down, you should go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code Drome.
What do you get if you do that?
You can get free shipping, 50% off the first item, a free mystery gift, and I'm totally gimping this up because it was off the top of my head. There's something else, I'm sure.
Three free DVDs,
that's right.
See, none of us are feeling it tonight. It's post-episode 100 blues, and we're just meh.
I just got the blues because I just got back from seeing The Collection.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I liked The Collector. I thought that was genuinely pretty suspenseful. And I like the idea that it's in the first 20 minutes, half hour, it starts out like this guy's just going in this house just to steal this diamond. It's like this kind of burglar movie, but he like breaks into a torture porn film. like that's what happened. That's what the first one's about. It's this whole setup where this guy, his wife owes money to loan sharks. He was scoping out this rich dude's house, and then he breaks in to steal this diamond. And there's this whole scene beforehand where he's adamant to the guy he works with, like, I need the money by midnight. And, like, it's this whole kind of tense thing. And then he breaks in and discovers that a jigsaw-like serial killer has already broken in and set traps in the house and is torturing the family. That was honestly, it was well done. That was a clever spin on that kind of current subgenre of horror. And it was rather suspenseful and well done. The second one, which takes place maybe a couple of days after the first one, is just a straight up Saw knockoff.
Well, do you think the Asylum will put out a mockbuster of that? Or do you think that one missed their radar?
Who knows? I've seen the Asylum do some knockoffs of some B movies that didn't really get very wide circulation.
Well, see, the reason I'm bringing that up is tonight's topic is going to be about the difference between ripoffs and cash-ins, because right now New Line Cinema and the Tolkien Estate are suing the Asylum, and I'm sure the Asylum's used to being sued, but in this one, they're going to lose. They're being sued over their movie Age of Hobbits, which is supposed to come out the week before The Hobbit comes out. Here's the problem. The word Hobbit is trademarked. The Asylum really has no defense against this. They're going to have to change the title, and they're going to have to remove any reference to Hobbits from the final film. They don't really have a defense against this.
The Asylum's defense is that the word Hobbit is public domain, that Hobbit was a term for short people.
But it's also a trademarked term, the same as Jedi is for the Star Wars movies. The Asylum wouldn't legally be able to make a Star Wars movie called, like, Age of Jedis without now Disney coming after them and Disney having the right to do it.
Remember when they ran into some stuff with when Battleship came out, and they changed that title fairly quickly, which I thought their defense of that would have been a lot easier than their defense of the word Hobbit.
Well, they only had to change it on US DVD releases.
I did hear that because Filmbrain watched it. And yeah, he saw it on the Battleship title.
Well, so that brings up the question. Now, the trailer, in all honesty, doesn't really look like it's a Hobbit ripoff. It looks more like just a Lord of the Rings-style knockoff. I mean, in fact, none of the characters are even short in the trailer. That brings me to the question for you guys. The difference between a ripoff and a cash-in, because I see Age of Hobbits as a cash-in. I see that Alien Origin, that was a cash-in on Prometheus. Transmorphers was a cash-in. I don't see those as ripoffs so much as we're just trying to ride a trend.
Well, most people would call them mockbusters, but David Michael Latt, who runs Asylum and produces all their stuff, he much prefers the word tie-in.
That's awesome.
Unofficial tie-in?
Yes, an unofficial tie-in.
Official. It's official, dude.
I see both sides of this issue. The Asylum tries so hard to kind of sucker the American public. Alien vs. Hunter, when that came out opposite Alien vs. Predator Requiem, the poster used the same font as Aliens vs. Predator, had the same placement of the faces, a very similar tagline. It looked almost like the poster for Aliens vs. Predator Requiem. You can see how somebody might be fooled by that.
That would happen. When I worked at the video store, every now and then someone would return a copy that they rented because they thought Transmorphers was Transformers, or they thought, like you said, Alien vs. Hunter. Same thing with Paranormal Entity. And it even happened when this wasn't Asylum, but this happened once with that that Pirates porno movie. Yeah, that it happened. It happened with that. Yeah, that would happen.
Anything that was in the adult section?
No, it wasn't in the adult section. It was in the new release section.
Oops.
Like right next to the Pirates films.
I know when Puss in Boots came out, Redbox had a Puss in Boots knockoff that had William Shatner as the voice of Puss in Boots. My daughter insisted I rent it because she thought it was the actual one. And I'm telling her, no, this is a fake movie. It's going to suck really hard. You don't want to rent this.
I bet I would enjoy it better than the other one. It's got Shatner in it. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's been Shatnerfied.
I know. That'll make me like it better.
But then it brings up the question, what is the line when you go from cash-in to rip-off?
I would say when it actually uses plot points, plot devices, similar characters, similar type story to the one that it's, well, yeah, ripping off. That makes it a ripoff. And you're right, when you look at a lot of us, not all of them, but when you look at a lot of the Asylum mockbusters, there is a fair amount of them that don't really use a lot of plot from the movie that they're mocking.
Transmorphers is a perfect example. That's far more of a Terminator Salvation ripoff than a Transformers ripoff.
Yeah, exactly. And in the case of, like, Alien Origin, there was that one scene at the end that seemed like it was tacked on. Tried to tie in about it having to do with, like, the origin of mankind and stuff like that. Almost like they wanted to make it a Prometheus ripoff, cash in like at the last minute. But yeah, a lot of those, they really don't share a lot of similarities in plot or tone to the movies that they're cashing in off of. And ripoff would be more, of course, along the lines of, you know, some of the movies that Bruno Mattei has done, like Shocking Dark being
Aliens,
a lot like Aliens, or SS Girls being like Salon Kitty.
Strike Commando basically being Rambo 2 meets Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Being a lot like Rambo 2.
I was watching an interview with Joe D'Amato last night, and he was talking about a movie that he'd recently done at that time called Fatal Attraction or something like that. And people are like, oh, this movie's a real big hit overseas. And Joe D'Amato's like, why? It's just a ripoff of 9.5 weeks.
I know, I like that. It has the title of one thing, but as a ripoff of something else. Just like, well, Shocking Dark, that's alternate title is Terminator 2, but it's a ripoff of Aliens.
Everyone knows I'm going to go here anyway, so we'll get it out of the way. Reservoir Dogs. Keep in mind, Brad, you and I have discussed this before. I love the movie. That doesn't change the fact that it's the same plot, the same characters, the same plot twist, and the same story as City on Fire. Reservoir Dogs, to me, is a ripoff. It's a better version, but it's a ripoff.
Yeah,
I'll say about that. I'll leave Tarantino alone.
It's a better version. I do like it better than... I love Reservoir Dogs. I do like it better than City on Fire. I do. Is it a ripoff? Yeah. But, you know, you could be a lot more forgiving about something like that as long as it still does its job. You know what I mean? Like, as long as it's still a very good movie, or at least very, very, very entertaining, then I'm fine with that. Then I don't get upset or mad about that at all, really.
And then you've also got ones that most Americans have never seen this film because of the injunction from Universal. You've got Great White, as it was going to be released here, or for our overseas listeners, The Last Shark. I'm sure you've seen that one with
Vic Morrow.
With Vic Morrow and James Franciscus. Now, that was such a carbon copy of Jaws. Universal won their lawsuit to get it blocked. It's the same story with the same characters.
Now, this is a pre-Twilight Zone Vic Morrow, right?
Well, considering he's not dead, yes.
Leave it to...
Leave it to Alex to ask.
Leave it to Alex to make that hilarious.
Yes, considering that Vic Morrow was alive in this movie, it's pre-Twilight Zone. John Landis hadn't murdered him yet. But like Great White,
and I like Great White. I think Great White's a fun movie. Hey,
it's a fun movie.
You could see clips of it in Bruno's Jaws 5.
Well, I'm going to get to Jaws 5 in a minute, but Universal was successfully able to show the court that it's the same movie and block it. Until the Italian DVD came out under the title The Last Shark a few years ago, the only official way you could see Great White was a Japanese VHS tape. That was the only official copy ever released of that movie.
Didn't they also do that with Beyond the Door? Because of the similarities of The Exorcist. Like, there was an Exorcist clone that there was a lawsuit from. It was either Beyond the Door or The Antichrist or Abby.
I'm not sure about that. I know Jennifer the Snake Goddess was such a close Carrie ripoff that they originally had it just named Jennifer and all the promotional materials. I mean, you look at the trailer and you think this is Carrie with other actors.
Yeah.
Oh, they had to recut that, redo the poster, because I'm not...
They added several more scenes and just turned it into Friday the 13th, Part 7.
Well, and it doesn't really have a whole lot to do with snakes, so the whole added Jennifer the Snake Goddess never made a whole lot of sense to me.
That's funny.
So there's only like one or two scenes that involve a snake in the final version. But yeah, this is not a new thing where you've got... But then that brings up the question of... Like with Jennifer, was that a ripoff of Carrie or a cash-in of Carrie?
I think you can have both. It's certainly easier to do both. If it's a ripoff of something, odds are that also means it's kind of a cash-in. I mean, not always, because I wouldn't say that, because obviously I don't think Reservoir Dogs is a cash-in of City on Fire. You could definitely have both.
Well, like the way I look at it is like 1982's Galaxy of Terror. Clearly a cash-in on Alien, not a ripoff at all because it shares absolutely no plot similarities. But it's clearly meant to appeal to that same audience. And then, conveniently enough, James Cameron did all the production design and the special effects for that movie, and then he'd go on to make the sequel, cementing the ties to Alien even more.
Well, and also, like, a lot of the Italians, too, were back in the day, were like, we want Rambo, or, you know, we want Mad Max. You know, that's certainly them,
the big one.
Yeah, yeah. We want that. We want you to make that. So that certainly evokes both the idea of a cash-in and a ripoff. Now, you could have some that were obviously could be considered just a cash-in, not necessarily a ripoff, like how Dawn of the Dead was released as Zombie, and then you've got Lucio Fulci's Zombie 2. Now, I do not consider Zombie 2 to be a ripoff of Dawn of the Dead.
No, because the plots are nothing alike.
They're nothing alike. They're radically different from each other. But yeah, calling it Zombie 2 when the other one's just called Zombie, yeah, that kind of makes it a cash-in. But it's not a ripoff.
But then you also have, with Italian cinema, Terminator 2 from Mattai.
Exactly.
And that Jaws 5 that we brought up earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Jaws 5 was surprisingly late in the game. Wasn't that late 90s, early 2000s that was made?
I don't know. It wasn't early 2000s. It was the date on it is 95, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was made earlier than that. I mean, I might be wrong, but it definitely gives off that vibe of like this might have been made like maybe a few years before 1995.
Sticking with the Alien thing I brought up, you have ones that can't be considered cash-ins that are straight ripoffs, like William Malone's Creature. The spacesuits look the same. The creature looks the same. The planet looks the same. It's got aliens that attach to your face. It's like, okay, this is clearly Alien done on a much lower budget with a drunken Klaus Kinski. There's no way that that was a cash-in, especially 6 years after Alien. You just go, they just decided we wanted to rip them off. I mean, hell, it's even got the title Alien, the title Creature. It's even got a similar style of title to it. There's no way that that movie was not a straight-out ripoff to me.
Oh, I don't think anyone would disagree with you on that.
So then, but then that brings up, like, you brought up, like, the Road Warrior stuff from the Italians in the late 70s and early 80s. I can't think of a specific one, maybe you can, that actually ripped off the plot of Mad Max or Road Warrior. They all kind of took the style and they wanted a similar kind of movie. Those, to me, were all cash-ins and not ripoffs.
Yeah, because you wouldn't find a lot of the same plot devices used in them. But, you know, they would have similar-looking characters, similar acting characters, but the story would be kind of different. Like, you know, the characters from Rats, from Bruno's Rats, look like they're straight out of a Mad Max movie. The plot's really nothing like a Mad Max movie. The New Barbarians, or even 2019 After the Fall of New York, that was kind of a knockoff Escape from New York. But if you look at it now, the plot of you would actually think more about the plot of Children of Men than you would Escape from New York.
D'Amato's film is actually a ripoff of 2019 After the Fall of New York. He's ripping off a ripoff.
You still saw that a lot, especially with the disaster films in the late 90s. You know, Twister came out, but then you'd on TV you'd have Night of the Twisters, Night of the Cyclones, or just Cyclone. Or when the volcano movies came out, there would be a lot of those on TV.
Aftershock, The Fall of New York. I remember that miniseries.
Yeah. And that one miniseries that was just called Meteor, Armageddon, and Deep Impact came out.
Asteroid was that. Meteor was the one from the 70s. The Michael Biehn one for Armageddon was Asteroid.
Okay. I remember it was like a two-part miniseries.
Yep, and then they edited it down to 90 minutes for the VHS release.
Yeah, and I know that Asylum's released a lot of those end-of-the-world disaster movies.
Oh, especially when the movie 2012 came out.
Oh, they have a ton of movies called 2012, Supernova, 2012, Doomsday. Even their Zombie Apocalypse one, some titles releases said 2012 Zombie Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about how the Asylum might be losing Age of Hobbits, and Jennifer the Snake Goddess had to be changed, and Great White we never even saw in the U.S. Do you think that there's a certain dividing line when you've copied enough of the story or enough of the characters that you've gone too far? Or do you think you should be able to, you know, if they don't call you on it, go for it?
You know, I mean, that's a really, really good question. I mean, my obvious answer is, you know, hey, just fucking go for it, man. Just make your movie. Do it, dude. Go right ahead, man. I mean, I've not one to talk, really. My movie Cheap is a straight ripoff of Last House on Dead End Street.
And see, you admit that, but you're not trying to hide it, though, either.
No, there's a character in the movie who's wearing a Last House on Dead End Street t-shirt.
How about when a filmmaker has such an iconic style that, say they're working for a certain studio, then they go to another studio and it seems like they're ripping off their own stuff. I can't think of a filmmaker, but you guys heard about the John Fogerty CCR lawsuit about his music, right, Brad?
No, actually, I didn't hear about this.
This was in like the late 80s, early 90s, I think. John Fogerty was a singer of Creedence Clearwater Revival and one of their main songwriters.
I know that.
I'm telling the audience. Okay, and then obviously when they broke up, he went to a different record company. Since his style was so pervasive in CCR, the John Fogerty band sounded a lot like CCR. The record company that owned Creedence's stuff sued him for sounding too much like Creedence. So he was basically sued for sounding too much like himself. The judge laughed it out of court.
Yeah, good, as the judge should have done.
But it just it shows you that to them, anything can be a ripoff. You know, how dare you rip off you?
I mean, there's certainly a difference, though, in that than a movie that's a straight carbon copy ripoff of something else. But you actually bring up another good point, too. What are some movies where a director has more or less kind of ripped off his own work?
Not so much a director, but I can definitely see how when Tarantino was very angry over what he said Oliver Stone did to Natural Born Killers, you can definitely see that he was trying to kind of do his own version of Natural Born Killers with the Kill Bill movies. You can't tell me you don't see a certain similarity between Tarantino's Natural Born Killers script and his Kill Bill script, kind of like he wanted to fix what he thought Stone ruined.
I see that. I always saw that more as like a straight homage to like movies like Lady Snowblood and Thriller than I did something that's like Natural Born Killers.
But there are certain little touches throughout Kill Bill that are very much like what was in Tarantino's original Natural Born Killer script. For one, from the Oliver Stone movie, you've got the slow motion POV of the hatchet flying through the air just like it does the knife.
Oh, okay.
In the beginning of Natural Born Killers, that's from Tarantino's script. He wanted, you know, certain weapon POV shots. And there were just little things such as the out-of-order storytelling, the way Kill Bill is told kind of within flashbacks to flash-forwards to flashbacks and whatnot. That was in his script.
But
you just see certain stylistic touches that were from Tarantino's Natural Born Killer script.
Yeah, but the out of order thing and the flashback, that's very Tarantino, though. Reservoir Dogs does that. Pulp Fiction does that.
A lot of what Tarantino does is homage to other stuff. I could see him being upset with Oliver Stone for not catching that this is supposed to be an homage to this and then just shooting it his own way.
Or even with Ridley Scott and Prometheus, it seemed like he was kind of trying to remake the style of Alien without being Alien. Does that make sense? I'm not faulting
him
for it.
I don't
not
blame
faulting
him.
I don't
blame him for doing that, nor do I think that that's necessarily a bad idea either.
Well, okay, another trend that had a whole slew of cash-in slash rip-offs, there's two I'm thinking of right here. Let's go to the 70s first, and when Death Wish hit. You saw all those rape revenge urban thrillers pop out right after Death Wish was a monster.
Yeah.
Most of those
I would call cash-ins and not rip-offs.
That is the exploitation genre. There's so many rape revenge films.
Right, but Death Wish was the one that broke it wide open to the mainstream.
There's definitely some that are straight out inspired by Death Wish, and that's certainly riding that vigilante trend of the time in those movies. You saw the same thing too after Dirty Harry had come out.
Oh yeah, you saw a lot of Dirty Harry inspired films.
Yeah, yeah, and then again, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because I think that at the end of the day, all that matters is whether or not you make a decent flick, or at least one that's very, very entertaining. And I like the vigilante genre a lot. A lot of those I did find very entertaining.
I did too. I mean, even the ones that weren't Death Wish official Death Wish sequels.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. Is like a lot of the kind of Death Wish clones ripoffs I liked better than the Death Wish sequels.
Yeah, how many of those rape revenge things are actually inspired by or ripping off or cashing in off of I Spit on Your Grave?
Well, I Spit on Your Grave was a full 4 years after Death Wish, so you had a big 4-year window to make a lot of those rape revenge movies. Not so much the ones with the woman getting the revenge, but the husband or something.
I'm talking specifically the woman, you know, the I Spit on Your Grave route.
Well, Miss 45 has a lot of similarities to Thriller. That was, I want to say, 1981. That one had come out. That's got that has a lot more similarities to Thriller than it does I Spit on Your Grave. There was a movie in the early to mid 80s called Naked Vengeance that's a lot like I Spit on Your Grave.
Because the other genre or the other movie that broke everything wide open was actually not the movie that started it. It's actually the second movie. Halloween started the modern slasher genre.
Uh-huh.
Friday the 13th is the one that inspired all the knockoffs and cash-ins. Because in that 2 years between Halloween and Friday, you didn't see a whole lot of them. After Friday the 13th in 1980, the floodgates opened wide.
Man, I'm surprised it actually. I think when you brought up Friday the 13th and whatnot, I'm like, wow, I'm actually surprised it took us this. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was like, I'm surprised it took us this long to get to the Friday the 13th ripoffs.
Because that's the most obvious one, almost, other than Alien or Road Warrior.
Yeah.
When The Burning came out in 1981, everyone was like, oh, it's a Friday the 13th ripoff. And Harvey Weinstein, who wrote it, was insisting, I wrote this before that movie was made.
I like The Burning. That's a the Burning's a good flick. Sleepaway Camp was dismissed as a Friday the 13th ripoff.
Yeah, but they kind of advertised it as such too.
Did they? The advertisements I've seen never really brought up Friday the 13th.
No, but stylistically, it was sort of, if you like Friday the 13th, you might like this.
Oh yeah. Uh huh.
And then there's the granddaddy of all of these, the one that broke it open even more than Friday the 13th, 1977 Star Wars. I think there are probably more Star Wars cash-ins than any other film in film history.
You got Star Crash, Star Odyssey,
Battle
Beyond the Stars. I don't see why everyone calls that a Star Wars ripoff. It's a Magnificent Seven Samurai ripoff with Star Wars aesthetics. Battle Beyond the Stars was a Star Wars cash-in. The story has nothing whatsoever to do in any way Star Wars-ish. It's a straight out Seven Samurai in space.
That's the same with
a lot of those too. I wouldn't like Star Odyssey really doesn't have much story wise to do with Star Wars, but it does have certain devices like those cardboard things that look like lightsabers.
And then you also had the duck robots, which were clearly supposed to be the R2-D2s. You had the clear Darth Vader-ish villain. You had the specific, we're going for this thing.
Yeah, you did. I mean, like, but yeah, in terms of, like, story, it wasn't anything like that, really.
Star Crash is called one of the most crass Star Wars ripoffs of all time, and that's got nothing whatsoever story-wise to do with it, but it does have the sassy robot and the Darth Vader, and it's got the lightsabers, and it's definitely a Star Wars cash-in, but yeah, the story in Star Crash, nothing whatsoever to do with the story of Star Wars.
Star Crash is awesome.
I love that movie. Crash is... Well, first of all, seeing David Hasselhoff with big poofy hair and Christopher Plummer slumming it like you wouldn't believe, that's worth it for just that alone.
Throwing Joe Spinell into the mix, it's great.
And Carolyn Monroe in so many hot outfits. She changes her outfit like every scene.
And it's fantastic. Yeah, I love that movie. And I always kind of say, you know, I'm like, you know what? Go for it. Because there's a lot of movies from the past that Star Wars borrowed from.
Exactly.
Like, Kurosawa's The Hidden Fortress.
Exactly. Like The Hidden Fortress and stuff like that. So, you know, by all means, do with what you will with taking some inspiration from Star Wars.
Well, sticking with Lucas, then, how about after Raiders of the Lost Ark came out? You saw all those Alan Quatermain and King Solomon's Mines and Firewalker, and you saw all those Adventure in the Jungle going through caves to find the treasure movies.
Oh, yeah, and after Crystal Skull came out, Asylum released their own, like, Alan Quatermain.
It was Alan Quatermain and the Temple of Skulls.
Okay, you interviewed the guy, Brad. When did Treasure of the Four Crowns come out? Was that in Raiders of the Lost Ark cash-in? Or I seem to remember that almost coming out before.
I think that, no, that didn't come out before Raiders. Treasure of the Four Crowns, that came out at the very, very end of that 80s 3D kick.
Probably 83 then?
83 is about when it... 82 and 83 is about when it was pretty popular. And then in... I want to say that his was 84. Because I did ask him about that. He only talked about that really briefly. And he didn't have many fond memories of it. I can't remember if he said anything about Raiders or not, but... If I remember right, he certainly, you know, they certainly just wanted to do another 3D movie like Coming at You.
And that movie is beautiful for having the most crass 3D ever. I don't think 4 seconds go by without something flying at the camera in that film.
And it's great. I think it's one of the best 3D movies because of that. Not only that, you've got all that gimmicky 3D stuff they're doing in it, which is glorious, but it's also... a pretty solid Western.
My problem is I've never seen it in 3D.
I've seen a very cheap 3D version of it, the one that Rhino put out. They've been touring with that noir 3D version of it, which is supposed to look really damn good. I haven't seen that cut of it, but only clips and the trailer and such. But the 3D version I saw was just like a cheap Rhino, like, anaglyph 3D cut of it.
Since we've segued towards Spielberg, what about E.T.?
E.T. Hey, Brad, we got to bring it. We got to bring up Nuki.
E.T. total ripoff of Pod People. I'm just saying. They just took out the slasher movie part of it.
Well, I was gonna say though, as bad of a movie it is, I still love watching Mac and Me.
I'd rather watch Mac and Me than Nuki again.
I'd rather watch anything than Nuki.
Nuki is one of the worst goddamn things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, and then there was also another one that inspired a lot of cash-ins and only a few rip-offs, one of which we already brought up, and that's Jaws. You saw all those coastal towns attacked by such-and-such creature. Because in a lot of those, just like we were talking about, like with the Italian Road Warrior cash-ins, the stories are totally different. I love the movie Tentacles, which, no, it's got nothing to do with schoolgirls or the Japanese. But I love the movie Tentacles, and people always call it, oh, it's just a Jaws ripoff. Other than the fact that it's a coastal town and it's harassed by a monster from the ocean, there's nothing whatsoever Jaws-like about it.
Those were, you saw a lot of those back then. It was the same thing with, like we mentioned earlier, with the knockoffs of the disaster movies that came out in the late 90s.
There's actually a Japanese film that came out a couple years ago called Jaws in Japan.
Is there really?
Yeah, it's also known as
awesome.
It's also known as Psycho Shark, and there's no shark in it until the very, very end.
Well, and then speaking of that, when you brought up Japan, after Godzilla was a hit, not counting the other Toho movies, you had a lot of giant lizard knocks over a coastal Swedish town or a Norwegian town. A lot of the foreigners latched on to the giant reptile knocking buildings over genre after Godzilla was a big hit.
You're talking about
even Kim Jong-il did that.
You're talking about that Danish film, Reptilicus?
Well, there's Reptilicus, there's Gorgo, there's Yon and Grey, Monster from the Deep, which is another Japanese one. Or is that Korean?
Yon Gary is Korean.
Okay.
I want to see a movie version of Velociraptor.
Well, and even in Japan, they were ripping it off with Daiei making their Gamera films.
Oh, yeah. Gamera, I really do see as a Godzilla. I will call it a ripoff, but I think they meant it more as a cash-in. They were just so creatively bankrupt, they couldn't think of any other way to do it than copy it. So
actually,
I don't think that one started as a ripoff.
If you watch the Shout Factory releases of Gamera and the first couple sequels, the guy they have doing the commentary for it, what's his name? August Ragone. He goes into the fact that turtles are a lot more culturally significant in Japan than lizards are.
So that makes it not a ripoff?
No, it makes it a ripoff that's more catered towards the Japanese people. Because even Godzilla was a ripoff of Beast from 20,000 Fathoms?
Beast of Yucca Flats.
No, this just has nothing to do with Tor Johnson.
No, it's that like Beast from 20,000 Fathoms or something. Because Inshiro Honda watched that movie and was inspired from that to make Godzilla.
So in essence, Ray Harryhausen was responsible for Godzilla?
Absolutely.
In essence, yes.
How about when TV shows do that? For instance, like when Lost came out and was huge, huge there, especially in that opening season. And then after the first season of Lost, you got shows like Surface, Invasion, shows like that that very much wanted to cash in on Lost success. You saw that too with ER, and then when
Friends.
Like Friends, yeah, because there was that show Buddies. Like when Grey's Anatomy. Even to this day, you still get like what's that show, like Emily something MD or whatever the hell it's got. I don't know. It just got canceled.
I don't even know that one.
Well, then you get a lot of TV and movies that try to cash in off the name of a director. Like they'll like have Wes Craven as an executive producer on it, but they will sell the film as Wes Craven's Wishmaster when Scream was really big.
Quentin Tarantino presents The Man with the Iron Fist.
Well, and that's another one. Scream. Scream was so full of imitators and cash-ins. The late 90s were a bad time for a slasher movie, thanks to Scream.
Yeah, you'll get no argument from me here.
Because everybody wanted to have the next Scream, and they were all trying. They all copied the formula of
Scream.
They
all made, which was slasher, but meta.
Dude, we know we're in a slasher movie, so that makes it like not a slasher movie, right?
Oh, you had a lot of, just like that movie, Halloween.
You had a lot of slasher movies about people making slasher movies.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Well, and then maybe one of you guys will know, what's the movie that kicked off the Nature Fights Back craze of the 70s? Or was that sort of a, no pun intended, natural progression of films?
The disaster kick that kind of led into that.
But I mean, these are pre-Jaws, so all of a sudden you've got like frogs, and you've got Day of the Animals, and Night of the Lepus, and things like that, and
Kingdom of the Spiders.
Kingdom of the Spiders, yes, it's one of my favorite.
You got the Swarm. And
the Swarm was actually a TV miniseries, I think, though.
I don't think
that was a movie.
That was theatrical.
Was it?
I can see why you'd think it was a miniseries. It was 2.5 hours long.
And it was Irwin Allen.
Yeah. No, that was theatrical.
The Swarm was surprisingly good, too.
I don't know. I just Googled Nature Fights Back, and it brought up March of the Penguins.
That's the one that kickstarted it all.
Well, see, to me, the most
Without that, we wouldn't have had parts of the Penguins.
See, to me, the most disturbing one of those is AIP's Frogs, because I love this actor. I cannot take Sam Elliott seriously with no mustache. I can't. He just looks wrong.
Like,
he looks
Christ,
creepy in that movie to me.
Yeah. It's like whenever I see Ron Silver without a beard.
Yeah, it's just, no, you're not Sam Elliott. You don't have a mustache. Stop sounding like him. Because you often had this thing where Roger Corman was called the ripoff king for a while in the 60s and 70s. And I can't think of a single movie that he outright ripped off. Yes, I consider him the cash-in king. No argument there. I really don't see Corman's output as ripoffs. Do you?
Off the top of my head, trying to think of one that I would consider to be just like an outright rip. But like what you just said, though, with cash-ins, certainly, with catching in on certain trends and attitudes that were going around at the time, certainly, yeah. One that's a straight-out ripoff of, off the top of my head, I can't really think.
Well,
he was definitely cash-in.
Well, and then you've also got, I wouldn't even consider this a cash-in, since they're the one that started the genre, Cannon with the ninja films.
Mm-hmm.
When Cannon started with Enter the Ninja, that's the film that broke ninjas wide in America, and Cannon just kept pumping different ninja movies out. Were they cashing in on their own fleck?
Oh,
yeah.
When you get into some Godfrey Ho ninja territory, there you'll find some ripoffs.
Oh yeah, I'm just talking the canon stuff right now. But yes, mm-hmm. The ninja films, you saw a lot of ripoffs in the ninja genre. Thank you, Mr. Ho.
And sometimes the Godfrey Ho stuff might not necessarily be sort of like ripping off something, but sometimes the movie that he was inserting stuff into totally were, like Crackdown Mission, Pierre Kirby. The movie that they're inserting the Pierre Kirby stuff into is almost a shot-by-shot remake of Miss 45.
I think I've heard you mention that one before, yeah.
And it's good.
Godfrey Ho's Ninja Holocaust was amazing.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen Ninja Holocaust, Brad, you have to. I can send it to you when the show is over. It's the one with the boxing subplot.
Okay, I was thinking of the one. Oh, Ninja Champion's the one I'm thinking of. The one where he inserts it into a rape movie.
No, this one is so awesome. The head evil ninja snaps his fingers and his men form a human chair for him to sit on. It's
awesome.
Beautiful. And a guy actually uses his girlfriend as a weapon. He picks her up and she's kicking and it's brilliant.
There's ninjas like jumping out of boxes.
Yeah, don't you ever take a UPS package without checking it for ninjas.
I saw a fantastic one the other day where it was half Killer Shark kind of Jaws knockoff and half Miami Vice ripoff.
Shark's Paradise?
Shark's Paradise.
That Australian one?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I've got that one too. That actually segs into what I was going to say. There was also, after the hit of Miami Vice on TV, you saw a lot of undercover cop Miami drug dealer movies.
Oh yeah, he had Hawaiian Heat with Robert Ginty.
No, I'm talking movies. That's
movies,
TV.
Movies too.
Yeah, you saw a whole lot of those pop up that really wanted to cash in, like the Italian Miami Horror. The logo is the exact font of Miami Vice.
Hollywood it's Miami
even got
Vice.
It's even got a Jan Hammer sounding intro. And so it's like, okay, what if Miami Vice, everyone was dubbed and aliens crashed in the Everglades?
A few months ago, Josh sent me a copy of that Shark's Paradise, and then I watched it and messaged him afterwards going, why the f*** did you make me watch this?
I watched it over at Ed's a few weeks ago.
It's both brilliant and really sadly bad at the same time, isn't it?
It kind of is, because it's sort of like, man, the idea behind this is so great. Miami Vice with sharks, and you watch it, and it's sort of like, I guess it's kind of fun in a way, sort of, only because it evokes imagery of Miami Vice, and it's got sharks in it.
With Aussies?
Yeah. It almost comes across more like it's a failed pilot more than a movie.
Yeah, you have that whole plot of, like, some criminals, like, if you don't give me $1 million, I'm going to have these sharks attack your surfing competition. Mm-hmm. And it's all like, okay, we got to be action cops to solve this crime.
Well, and then you've also got the weird subgenre of the disgraced cop who can, basically the Lethal Weapon formula, the buddy cop movie where the cops can never solve the case until they're taken off the case. And after they've turned in their badge, that's when they can truly fight the bad guy. You yep. saw a lot of those after Lethal Weapon came out.
Mm-hmm.
That was another one that had imitators up the ass.
Or, how about even the Die Hard clones?
Yeah, you saw a lot. You even saw those on TV. There was a Booker episode where terrorists took a high rise and Booker played all John McClane, having to get him back.
I saw a made-for-TV once where it was Paul Reiser stuck in a high-rise.
Was it a comedy?
No! It's from the mid-90s. It's called The Tower. And Paul Reiser goes to work in this it was basically like if you cross Die Hard with... What's that... God damn it. What's that movie where the girl is trapped in the house with that highly intelligent security system and it, like, tries killing her?
Oh, I know what movie you're talking about, too.
Yeah.
I can't think of it, but I know what film you're talking about, yeah.
It's like that, because this high-rise, this skyscraper has this extreme, like, security system. And Paul Reiser, it's like his first day working there, and something goes wrong with his, like, identity card. So the building tries to kill him.
Well, because, see, the one I immediately went to, even though it wasn't Paul Reiser, was that Fox TV movie with George Carlin and Ben Stiller in a high rise.
Tower Heist?
Tower, yeah.
No. George Carlin, not Eddie Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Well, and then you had another film that had a whole slew of cash-ins. Again, none that I would call outright ripoffs, but that would be Gremlins. You saw all those little monsters on the loose movies after that. You had the Critters and the Munchies and...
Ghoulies, the Hobgoblins.
Yes. That was almost a subgenre of itself, was the Gremlin knockoff. And that one didn't seem to last all that long. Not counting the Critters films actually getting four movies deep, which is still a little surprising to me.
They had to take it to space.
To me, that's the only one of those, let's take our horror franchise to space, that made sense because they were space criminals to begin with. So that one didn't seem as ludicrous as Pinhead going to space or Jason. Or the Leprechaun.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it did. It was like, okay, so, I mean, it's taking place in space, but...
They're from space.
they are from space, so hey, okay, why not?
And hell, I think, if I'm remembering the first film right, the opening shot is a space prison on an asteroid. So that one made sense. I was all right with the Critters.
What was the subtitle for the fourth one? Was it like, they're invading your space or something like that?
I don't know, but I just remember Brad Dourif is awesome in that movie.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, he was.
And Angela Bassett, probably in one of the roles she wishes people wouldn't remember her for.
Ah, whatever.
Hey, I remember when she was on Alien Nation, the TV series, as a nosy reporter.
What was that movie you put up a box cover for the other day that looked just like Alien?
Dark Lurking.
Did you watch it?
No, I haven't seen the movie yet, but everyone's calling it an Alien ripoff, and just based on the cover alone, yeah, they're trying to rip off Alien with that cover. It was so close, I'm surprised 20th Century Fox didn't sue them.
I think I put a comment about it too. It reminded me of
Xenophobe, yeah.
With the alien bursting through the NES cartridge.
I remember that and Werewolf, the NES cartridge, were the ones that always, the covers were stunning to me. Just white or yellow background. Yeah, those were awesome. And I had the same Xenophobe thing. Every time I saw an Alien ripoff, I'm like, Xenophobe! Oh, no, okay.
Yeah, sweet, it's Xenophobe. That game sucks.
Oh, that game was horrible. Yes.
Half of the screen, if you're playing that game just by yourself, half of the screen is just the logo of the company, is the Sunsoft logo.
There was, I'm familiar with that Werewolf game because there was a mom and pop video store where I grew up that only rented two NES games, Mega Man 5 and Werewolf. But the tagline for Critters 4 nice. Was, Critters 4 had the tagline of, in space, they love to hear you scream.
I don't mind when cash-ins do that. Like, do you guys remember the tagline for Blood Beach? Came out right after Jaws 2. The tagline was, and just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. The tagline for Blood Beach was, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, you can't even reach it.
Still the best,
I thought that's brilliant.
The best tagline of all time, though, is still for Pieces. It was just said, Pieces, it's exactly what you think it is.
That almost strikes me as uninspired at the same time as being genius.
Yeah.
But it's one of those accidental geniuses that we couldn't think of anything better, and it turned out to be the perfect tagline.
Well, the tagline for that Sharknado movie they're making.
Oh, God.
It's a tornado of sharks.
Yeah, it's an asylum film.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be great. It's a tornado of sharks. So the poster is this tornado of sharks, and it says Sharknado, and then it just says, enough said.
And see, I don't mind when you're making a movie that is outright, you know you're making crap, basically. I'm totally fine with that. It's where they get pretentious and the Asylum thinks they're making a real film. Those are the ones that I have issues with.
Oh, how about, have you seen the poster for the remake of The Evil Dead?
Yes.
Where it says, the scariest movie ever made, or something like that. Which I haven't seen it. It will be the scariest movie ever made.
I think the trailer looks absolutely horrendous.
It does look horrendous.
And to me, it's not an Evil Dead movie. Honestly, and this does fit perfectly into this argument, I think the Evil Dead remake looks more like an Evil Dead knockoff than it does an Evil Dead film. And that's not a good thing for it.
It's the same problem that I have looking at the Texas Chainsaw 3D trailer. Same problem that I have with that, where it just looks too polished.
The whole
you know what
Texas
I mean?
Chainsaw is supposed to be pseudo-documentary without being a mockumentary, kind of.
Yeah, it's gritty looking, it's grainy, it's and the thing with the Evil Dead remake on it just looks too polished for me, too.
And it looks too almost torture porny, because to me, a deadite in all the other films, the comics, everything, the games, a deadite, you get possessed and turn into a demon. A deadite is not a self-mutilator. To me, that's not a deadite. Someone splitting their tongue with a razor blade? That's not deadite behavior.
And I don't, like, it doesn't bother me. It honestly doesn't bother me that it doesn't have Ash in it. Because
no,
I
agree with that, yeah.
That does not bother me at all. Because I would so rather it not have Ash in it than somebody else to be playing him.
But how's this? Now, here's an idea I've seen kicking around online that might actually be kind of fun. Bruce Campbell is confirmed to have a cameo in this. Nobody is saying who he's playing. Wouldn't it be funny if, just going by the plot of the other films, they open the portal to send the deadites back or whatever, and Ash actually makes a cameo as a dimensional traveler?
If he's playing, if he turns up in it,
that would be hilarious.
Ash. Yeah, yeah. If he turns up in it and he's playing Ash, I'm cool with that.
But yeah, he's confirmed he has a cameo, but the fact that they're not saying who he plays, that's implying that they want that guarded for a reason, like he might be having a cameo as Ashley J. Williams. So I don't know about that, but I am not looking forward to the Evil Dead remake.
Speaking of the ripoffs and cash-ins, a genre that my daughter has had me stuck in lately is what I'm calling pupsploitation, is just all of the talking dog movies.
Are there that many that it's actually a genre, Alex?
There is. In fact,
like Snow Buddies?
Yeah, there was Snow
my
Buddies
wife owned
Santa
Snow Buddies.
Buddies. I watched the Asylum's talking dog movie Golden Winter, and then Netflix Netflix recommended, oh, well, you will like this movie called The Retrievers, which was an even lesser film.
Baldo!
Well, you would also have, like, when Air Bud came out, yeah, there was, like, a billion Air Bud sequels. But then there would also be, like, the knockoffs, like, oh, shit, it's a raccoon that knows how to play soccer.
There was,
the thing with Air Bud is they're eventually going to run out of sports for that dog to play.
They did. That's why they made the Air Buddies.
Rollerball, dude.
Yes, Air Bud and a Rollerball remake.
Yeah, dude, it'll be better than the actual Rollerball remake.
No, the Australian cash in where it's a kangaroo. you got a dingo playing rollerball.
Or you could just have the running man and just call it the running dog.
Well, totally.
When we talk remakes in a couple of weeks, I'll be bringing up the running man because I got a lot to say about that. But we are running out of time. Has this week been a cash in or a ripoff of a previous show? You, the audience, will decide.
It would be kind of funny if we just simply just remade one of our older episodes.
But next week, we are going to have a sequel to our episode on sequels, so we'll be talking sequels next week. So where can we find Brad Jones? Brad, son of Sleepaway Camp Jones.
TheCinemaSnob.com.
Where can we find Suede Alex?
GeekJuiceMedia.com.
SuedeAlex.com.
And
I'm going
from last week, guys, I beat the Vietnamese. I'm the first American that's actually beaten the Vietnamese in years. My website is back, 1201beyond.com. So 1201beyond.com, 1201beyond@gmail.com. And just good night. Maybe we'll try again next week. I don't know.
I'm not.
Let's go. Ready? From the top. My favorite shows on TV have 12 minutes of advertising. I can't get behind that kind of time.
Eat quickly, drive faster, make more money now. I can't get behind that.
My kids say, he said to me, and I'm like, and he's like, and she's like.
It's all he's all, she's all.
I can't get behind that kind of, like, English. That'll be 6 to 8 weeks before delivery.
The rising oceans, the warming temperatures.
The dying polar bears, no tigers in 50 years.
Rising poison in the air and water.
I can't understand why the price of gas suddenly rises when oil goes up.
But takes months to go down long after oil falls.
I can't get behind any of that. I can't get behind the gods, who are more vengeful, angry, and dangerous if you don't believe in them.
Why can't all these gods just get along? I mean, they're omnipotent and omnipresent. What's the problem?
What's the problem? What about the men who say, do as I do? Believe in what I say for your own good, or I'll kill you! I can't get behind that!
I can't get behind that! Everybody knows everything about all of us!
That's too much knowledge!
I can't get behind that!
Yeah. What about student drivers using my streets to learn? If you learn to play the drums, you gotta go to a studio, go to a parking lot, for God's sakes! Why are you jeopardizing my life? I can't get behind a student driver!
I can't get behind a driver who drives like a student driver! If you're gonna drive an urban assault vehicle, then get off the phone and keep your eyes on the road!
Lifetime guarantee?
Whose lifetime? Not mine. I haven't that much time left. Let's make it yours. Everybody's got a longer life than me. The leaf blowers. Is there anything more futile?
Car alarms.
Clap off.
Clap on.
Spam.
Size matters.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it
no,
does.
It doesn't. No,
yes,
it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
My
yes,
phone
does.
Rings.
Make millions in minutes.
It's a computer.
Lose inches in hours.
Leave me the hell alone.
Eat more. Spend less.
The colonel is breakdancing. Give me a break.
Credit terms arranged.
I can't get behind any of that. I can't get behind so-called singers. They can't carry a tune. Get paid for talking. How easy is that? Well, maybe I could get behind that.
Well, I can't. If you have to fix it with a computer, quantized, pitch-corrected, and overly inspected, then you can't do it. And I can't get behind that.
I can't get behind a fat ass.
Yeah. Bill, can you turn around and do one more?
Always can do one more.
Let's hit it.